Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Culinary Convo's Cookbook Corner. And we've got a special guest with us who has been so kind to send me their cookbook, Lulade Mogis. Is that right?
Close. Mogis.
Mogis. Oh, man. Yes. See, I almost had that. Almost had. But it goes by Lula. Goes by Lula. Well, Lula, I appreciate you coming on. This is great.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So, Made Enebla, the Ethiopian cookbook here. It is recipes from an Ethiopian kitchen. The main thing I, first off, in an Ethiopian kitchen, I'm guessing just like any great French, you know, highfalutin dining type of, there's a hierarchy, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And so is it just whoever has the most time, right? Like grandma's top dog, right?
Always.
Always. Then it goes down to, would you say it goes down to like aunties or moms who have kids and those who don't? Like, does it diversify like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be basically, like, by age. So, like, even if it's my auntie, yep. So, like, my mom is the second one. So, I guess if her sister is there, then that would be the hierarchy. And then it would be my mom and then the sisters. Fortunately for them, they all have kids. So, there's that kind of goes away.
Yeah.
And then it's us, this generation, where we are the children, regardless of what our age are. It's, you know, they basically are... You know, if I'm in the kitchen with my mom, it's, you know, it's her kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no getting around it. You're like, basically you're trying to find all the good stuff. And basically it's like, no, you go by my organization rules, right? Third cabinet on the right. That's my spices. You're like, why? Why do you do this?
It should be here. And it's exactly. Don't you move my kitchen. Don't you move things around.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't dare. I wouldn't also dare. Like, I know better.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, every time I go up to my mom's house, and she lives, like, near the Seattle area, I'll go up there, and I'll start, you know, being like, you know what? I'm going to be the good son. I'm going to make a breakfast. I'm going to go down there. I'm going to start going. And inevitably... It's like they will wake up before I even turn on a burner because I'm just like looking through all these cabinets, the fridge, the pantry. I'm like, where do you put stuff? You guys, like when I lived here, it was all organized in my head and now it's gone. That organization has fluttered away. Yeah. But no, the Ethiopian kitchen, I mean, tell me about growing up. You grew up in Ethiopia until you were, did you say eight?
12. So
I was 12. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was born there. I was born in Ethiopia, in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. And I lived there with my family till about age 12. And then at age 12, my family decided to move all of us as a family, my parents and my siblings and I, to the States for, you know, more opportunities, better education and whatnot. And we moved to, first place we moved to was Dallas, Texas.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So it was, I mean, the one good thing about it is there is a huge Ethiopian community in Dallas, and we had a lot of uncles and aunts and cousins already there. So that part of the transition made it a little bit easier because it was just kind of like leaving home and coming here, and it was like, okay, family's still around us. So that was great. The difficult part on my end was I didn't speak any English. So
Yeah. English ain't easy either. You
it's
know?
Definitely.
Especially in Dallas, Texas. Lula, you hit, you know, they got the drawl going. Like, oh,
hey,
man.
I say y'all with no shame.
There you go.
Till this day. So
yeah.
But it was really good. I mean, I was one of the culture shocks of the difficulties and, you know, growing up, my sister and I went to an Italian school. So I spoke Italian and Amharic, which is the Ethiopian language. And then my brother actually went to a different school than us. He went to an Indian school, so he spoke English. So his transition was a little bit easier. And I moved, and then I'm like, I'm in middle school. I'm ready to go to class. And they're like, yeah, you can't attend class because everything is in English. Now you have to go to ESL. I'm like, oh. So
Man,
that
yeah.
was definitely a curveball and, just a learning curve essentially. And then, of course, there's a lot of the different things as far as growing up and what we were used to, and then coming here and, just adapting and changing and adjusting. But I'm very happy of the way my parents just kind of handled the transition because they wanted to make sure that even though we are now in the Western world and we are in America and they were adapting to the new world, they made sure that we still kept up with our traditions and culture. And there's a saying that my dad used to always say, like, once you leave the store, you can, be the Western person, but once you come home, this is Ethiopia. We do family dinners, the TV is off, we touch base, we cook together. Like, it was very like cultural in our home. And then you leave and it's like, oh no, I'm in America.
And that's the thing is like kind of like what you mentioned. I bet in Dallas you didn't get to flex the Italian that much at all, did you?
No.
Yeah.
No,
Oh man, I tell
unfortunately,
you.
no.
Yeah. Oh,
But it
yeah.
did make it easier to, because they do have a big Hispanic population. So
Right.
even when
Yeah.
I was in
Right.
ESL with all his like Spanish speaking people, and so I didn't speak it, but at least it made it easier to communicate because love
Right.
languages are so close. So,
Yeah, you got the Latin connection, right? You got
exactly. So
that.
that part of it
Yeah.
helped. So
Yeah.
that was a good way to kind of segue through it.
Definitely. And I do have to say, the pride in Ethiopia, it's very evident throughout your whole book. And it's beautiful. It really is.
Thank
It's one of those things. If you don't mind, I know on one segment, I won't give it all away because people need to go out and get this
you.
book. October 4th, right, is
Yes,
when it's
that's the
released.
released.
Yes.
Yes, it's on
Yeah.
pre-sale right now,
Go. Go
from
get it.
Amazon, Target to Barnes and Noble and several other things. But
Yeah.
it actual release date is October 4th.
October 4th. And I tell you what, yeah, go out, pre-order. That way, everybody gets their copies when they need it. Because let me tell you, one, it was a great read, period. Even if you're not the cook of the home, it
Thank
is an interesting read. Because, like you said, it basically you'd go out, you'd go to classes, you'd go out in, Dallas, Texas, but you got home and it was like, yeah, you're back in the capital. Like, this is Ethiopia again. This is, we're not, and it's one of those things where I think a lot of immigration stories that we hear, it's always like you're going to assimilate and do a lot of these things to basically blend in. And I think whenever I was reading through here, it was like, we'll blend in by basically eating your food, but otherwise, we're gonna do what we've always done, 'cause why wouldn't we?
Exactly.
Right?
Yes,
Like, this is
yes.
what we're gonna do. I'll pick up some English. You're gonna figure out that you can't handle spicy food, and we're gonna get through this, right? Like, that's how
That's
it
kind of
works.
how it is. It's like,
Yeah.
again, I'm very grateful and thankful for my family for doing that because it could have been that I moved here and went completely Western and forgot my culture and my tradition. And like you said, I'm a very proud Ethiopian, and my upbringing and my family and my culture, that I want to keep it alive and I want to pass it on to my future children. And and also kind of like inspiration behind even this book was, like, I was older than my younger sister, who got to experience the culture more than her before we left. And spending time with my grandmother and my aunts and my mom, and like in the kitchen, and even when we moved and so forth. And then she obviously just kind of grew up here, and so she'll ask me like, hey, I want to make this dish, how do I make it?
Yeah.
Like, because, and
Yeah.
so for people like her, like, I want her to know and be proud of the dishes where people ask her, hey, make this dish, and she knows because
Right.
She has a book for it now.
Exactly.
She can stop calling and texting me and asking me for recipes, and she can just be like, right. page 17, it's in there.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, did you lose a copy? Yeah, go to Target.
It's there.
It's there now. You can check it out. You know, exactly. You're like, I'll be kind this one time. I'll give you the, you know, my version. Yeah, but
I'll text you just one, and that's it.
Right, that's it. Like it's you know, knowledge is power, but it also costs money. That's how this is going to go. Yeah, but exactly. No, I mean that's like, and that's the thing that I think a lot of folks when they hear, you know, culture shock. And that kind of mm-hmm. thing, kind of, you know, you show up in Dallas, Texas, you're 12 years old. I would say many people would say anytime in your, you know, early, you know, 10, 11, 12, up into your teens, basically you're growing up and figuring out what, basically where you're going to be confident in the world. Were you mm-hmm. ultimately confident in your cooking even at like the teenage years age, or was it something you grew into over time, especially just being in the kitchen more often?
It's definitely something I grew into. Again, part of like my upbringing, I actually was not allowed in the kitchen, like back yeah. home, especially alone. I mean, I was very young. And so, but you know, me, you tell me I can't do something and then now I have to do it.
Mm-hmm. So, yep.
And so, you know, every opportunity that I got, I was sneaking in, trying to learn, trying to see. And it was because, you know, a lot of our dishes, like especially back home, you know, we're cooking over like hot stoves and fires and stuff. So it was more for my safety than like trying to keep me right. away from it. But yeah. For me, it was like must learn. And so every opportunity I got to watch. And the little things that, you know, my family would have all these beautiful gatherings on the weekends, and my mom and aunts and everybody would get together and they're cooking together. So I would be like, oh yeah, here, roll up this meatball or something like that. Like right. it would be like something yeah. small. Back home, we, you know, we had maids, you know, that cooked and cleaned. And so, you move to Dallas and it's like, oh yeah, no, there's no maids. It's my mom. Yeah. And then on some occasions, my dad cooking. So then it was like, no, Lula, you go in the kitchen and help. So then I got more of the hands-on training because it was like, I was genuinely right. helping.
Yeah.
And so I definitely grew into it. And then as far as like getting into being confident in my cooking, was definitely in like my college years where, you know, I was on my own and right. can't really rely on mom to be like, mom, it's not looking right. Come fix it. Like that all yeah. went away.
Yeah.
And so then that's when you're practicing and making a mistake and calling mom and being like, okay, I don't know what I did wrong. And then just like, help me. And yep. so, and then, you know, kind of like perfecting it that way. And then from like what kind of makes my book a little bit different is I want to essentially keep the, you know, the book is not like a fusion. It's not an American Ethiopian or California Ethiopian fusion cookbook. It's an authentic right. dishes from the culture. But the reality of it is the culturally, like if you were asking anybody who's like my mom's generation, my aunts and stuff, these stews take between 2, 3, sometimes 4 or 5 hours to make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just don't have that time in the right. Western world. Like, it's yeah. hard. And it was in college where I would be craving the food. And then, you know, I'm working and I'm going to school and I'm, you know, who has 4 hours to yeah, like exactly. make dishes? So I started experimenting in taking kind of these shortcuts without compromising the flavor. And, right. you know, and so it's just like, you know, there's like a perfect example is the misrwet, which is the lentil stew that usually takes between 1.5 to 2 hours. Yeah. I figured out a way to do it in 30 minutes without compromising the flavor. Yeah. And because, you know, who wants to come home? Like right now I'm working, you know, between 12 to 14 hour days sometimes. And I come home and I just want dinner so I can right. relax. And yeah. I don't have time 4 hours to cook. And then we're eating at 2 in the morning.
So. Right. Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like what you're saying. Especially the dorowat. Mm-hmm. Whenever I was reading through that, like you mentioned, I kept sitting there thinking like, When am I going to see, you know, the Instapot? Or, like, when am I going to see, like, because there's those, like, tricks of the trade, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's certain things. And that was the thing that I kind of appreciated was with yours, there were only, like, a couple where I was like, oh, that. So it's, like, kind of like with the lentils, you're mm-hmm. going to do a little bit of, like, you know,
the speeding soaking, up of
cooking.
The process.
Right. It just speeds it up a little bit. But like you were saying, it doesn't feel like you're trying to hack it. No. Right.
I'm not reinventing right. the wheel, you know.
No. Yeah.
It's what has been taught to me by my family, you know, from my grandmother and my mom and aunts and stuff, you know, it's been passed along through them. And so it's my home cooking. So like somebody yeah. who's Ethiopian can say, wait, that's not how I make it in my family. And that's maybe true. They might have their own right. way of making it.
Yeah.
But also I wanted to, you know, be respectful of the culture and the food, because, you know, everyone's like, well, why can't you just put it in a crock pot? Or why can't you just put right. it in an Instapot? Oh, and I'm like, man. Or a pressure cooker. And I'm like, yeah. no, I no. uh-uh. This is not one of those dishes.
Right. Yeah. That in a way, for the longest time, whether it was a pressure cooker, you know, your Instapot pressure cooker, like I said, you, in a way you kind of feel like I said, it's hacky. That's the mm-hmm. way that the terminology I use. You just feel like I'm hacking this a little too much. I'm going to have to clean all that. Like whenever I get done with it. Right.
Yeah.
So you got this huge pot that you now have to clean and then you're putting it into something else usually. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like you're having to transfer stuff over. It's like as much as that is saving you time and cooking, it's adding time elsewhere. It's adding time over the sink, cleaning the dishes. It's adding time and probably explaining how you cooked it. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, come on. And so, like you mentioned, especially for me, same thing. College years, I'm out and about. There is no time. Even though you're a college kid and you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, how much time did I have? Like, this was crazy.
Don't you miss it? You're like,
you're like, man, I had all the time in the world. Like,
I should have savored it more.
I know. You're like, man, I should have actually tracked how many times. Yeah. But no, it's like, you always think, I'm running short on time. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And I remember at least 3 or 4 like major, it made me and or my girlfriend or a friend kind of like, you know, do that like weird, like you raise your eyebrows and your cheeks kind of get red and people are like, you're sure you made this right? And you're like, I don't know. Like, I thought I had it. And then like you were saying, I do the embarrassing phone call to mom and I'm like, mm-hmm. hey, so like, chicken and dumplings. It didn't turn out. Yeah. This weird thing happened to the dumplings. You know, I thought I added enough, you know, like baking soda. She's like, you mean powder? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah,
that. She's like, you didn't add that, did you? I'm like, I'll double check, but I think I did. I don't know. You know, and so it's like you learn from those mistakes. You go through. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you just have to kind of make it in your own way and figure out, you know, where you can get that originality from. Like you were saying, exactly. like at home flavor, that is what you're looking for. And mm-hmm. that was the other thing that I do have to commend you. I never had, is it Burberry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Burberry seasoning. Never had it before. Okay.
You have to now.
Yeah, I have to. I've got the pictures scrolling through. I bought Burberry. I bought Mita Meat. I bought Teff, right? I got.
You are all over it.
Yeah, I am. I'm all over. I got the garbanzo bean flour. So the Chiro, right? Or Shiro? Mm-hmm. Is it Shiro? Yep. Yeah, got that. And then I got the Kibbe. Right.
Oh, wow. So, you went all out. Like you I just now have out. Any, you have an yeah. Ethiopian cabinet exactly. right now.
Yes. And I told my wife, I said, I'm going to get this stuff now. And she's like, okay, so you're going to expand. Because I've got tons of seasonings, different things, you know, za'atar for different Middle Eastern mm-hmm. things, you know, what have you. But literally I was going through there and I'm like, why don't I have chickpea flour? Like, why is that? Like, why don't I have Shiro? So I go and get that. And then it's like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, that Injera is like dark and I know it's not whole wheat and I don't know what it is exactly. So I'm going through it. And then I see that it's like, yeah, you can do teff, or like you mentioned, you can do whole wheat, just bread at times. If you're not in the mood of like doing the whole ferment of the teff and going through that, which I'm on day two right now of my ferment.
Good. Look at you. You already ahead of the game.
I am. I'm getting there. I like I said, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get more liquid on top from when I have to incorporate it. Because right now...
Oh, you will, because it will definitely separate. And then it will just, and you'll see it, like, you'll see it happening. And I think also the reason why I put, because, you know, I want, a lot of people either don't know about Ethiopian cuisine or don't, are too scared to try it or even investigate it. So that's why I'm like, you know, I want some people to basically base it on their comfort level, meaning, oh, you want to go all out like you did and just get all these ingredients and start making it? Great. If you are like, no, me, but I'll make the collard greens, that seems easy enough. And it's like, yeah, but you can have that over rice. You can eat that with pita bread. You can, it doesn't have to be with the injera. Like, do I like it more with the injera? 100%. But there's just sometimes that you don't have, either you don't, you can't go buy it or you don't have the time to make it, but you can still incorporate these dishes into your roster of weekly dinners and have something different.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And especially, it's one of those things where I'm glad you pointed out in the beginning of your book, like, hey, portions here, it's for like four. It's like four to six. Like, it's like you're wanting a lot. And especially with the injera, that is like,
you're going to make a lot.
Exactly. And so you've got enough for that breakfast.
It's not for, it's definitely not for one person.
Totally. And so like, even with just me and my wife, it's one of those things where like, we all the time are like, is this going to make enough for my lunch the next day? Is it going to make, you know, and like, I don't know how many times I think that's the thing you mentioned, like people, they get kind of a little bit hesitant if it's like, oh, this isn't something that's just automatically incorporated into like your traditional westernized, you know, diet kind of thing. And it's like, well, it all starts somewhere, right?
Of course.
We didn't all just start having spaghetti all the time. Like, no, like it starts somewhere. And for me anyways, definitely the Watts, the, definitely the, what is it? So I'm going to remember it. I promise you that. It's the breakfast dish with the injera that you tear it up. You add it with the, the fit. Oh,
yes.
That like, it's stuff like that where it's like, I've made enough injera and I've done all the Watts. I've had it. This is great. And then it's like, I got four or five injera left. What am I going to do with this? Then you make the fit.
There you go.
That's what you do. You go and you make the next thing. And that's the thing is like right now, I will say my parents, especially I'm a spice head. I love, you know, your typical habanero, jalapeno, what have you, which by the way, I am like so happy that almost, I don't know how many recipes in here called for multiple jalapenos and not seeds and stuff. Like you said, you de-seed it, you do what have, but like the jalapeno flavor is amazing and it only multiplies every time you add more of them. And it's great. And that's the thing is most of the time I see a lot of these recipes that are like, add one jalapeno if you would prefer, like add one. If you like, or the serrano.
And I'm like, add six.
Right. You're like, add six of these things. Like, don't be shy. Like, it's supposed to be that way. And plus, when you blend it with the bibir and everything else, the berberi. Yeah. It just is amazing. And the kibbeh, it's like you mentioned, it is a spiced ghee. It's not...
it is not your typical, like, that's why I'm like, cause some people, I've had friends where like, they've asked me, cause you know, when I was doing the menu testing, which I had to do a lot of, because, you know, I cook by looks, right? Like I'm like, you know, and then look and taste is the way I cook. You know, my friends always say like, I measure with my heart, like, a bit more, yeah. You know, just kind of adding it and whatnot. And so to have to like write things down, it was a lot of tests, you know, testing and like making sure that everything was coming out the way I wanted it to. But totally. Then I started sending it to friends and just being like, hey, make this dish and let me know how it turns out. And then they're like, hey, I can't, I mean, I don't want to use olive oil or vegetable oil. I really want to use the butter, but I can't find it. So I'm just going to use like, should I use unsalted or salted butter? And I'm like, no to both. Like, right. Don't. Right. It's not the same.
It is.
Yeah. Not at all.
No. So. And that's the thing is like, it's one of those things where once you, like, I've got my jar of kibbeh, and mm-hmm. that's going to last a while. Like,
that's because you don't need a lot. It's right. So little goes a long way.
Yeah.
And, so and I'm sure you've opened it and you've smelt it, right? Like, oh, it's definitely taste like,
it. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everything. It's flavorful. It's so flavorful. Like, it's, yeah. Cause so you yeah. can't get that from salted or unsalted butter. Like, and no. it's not something you yeah. can season at home or anything. It's just, no. it's like, if you can't get it, just cook it with vegetable oil or olive oil. Like, just yeah. do that. Like, don't.
Well, and yeah. And I noticed with the Burberry as well as the, Mita is mm-hmm. the, basically they are blends. It mm-hmm. to equate it to something, it's like the garam masalas of Indian yes. cuisine and that kind
100%,
of thing.
100%. Yes.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where I just feel like you gotta, you know, if you want to buy the cheapest one, get the cheapest one. Who cares? Just get a blend and then you mm-hmm. start with that and you can expand. You can make it spicy or less spicy. Like, you can change it any which way you want. But like you said, make it semi-authentic. Don't, yes. you know, like, and skimp on it.
Well, that's yeah. the thing. It's like, you know, because, you know, one of the things, like, as I was doing the book and I was, like, you know, working with my publishers, and then they're like, you know, Lula, you mentioned Burberry in almost everything. And I'm like, yeah, it's almost like the staple spice, right?
Yeah.
And they're like,
yeah.
can you give us a recipe for the Burberry? And I'm like, no. Like, no, yeah. there's some things that I know what I'm capable of, and that's not one of them, because right. it's very time consuming and there's so many processes, and there's over like between 26 to 28 ingredients that they put in it. And it's just like, you know, it's like going out, like, do you make your own curry at home or your own gram masala right. at home, or do you buy it? Because right. that process in itself, and I'm sure one day I'll figure it out, but for the sake of the person that I'm writing this cookbook for, is right. not that person. It isn't like that's something that you would write for like chefs, right?
Right.
Like,
right. Yeah. The people who are dedicating the drying time of mm-hmm. a lot of those spices and herbs. Like, yes. yeah, it's kind of like, it goes back to the whole like, yeah, well, Watts, we used to make them over 5 hours, but today, we're going to cut that time below half because nobody's yes. going to do that. Like, we can't uh-huh. do that anymore.
And I know.
It's, yeah, but no, I agree with you there. Same with the garam masala. First time you're trying Indian foods, you know, Thai foods, and you're doing curry, different things. Like you mentioned, you just get a blend somewhere.
And yeah, just get it.
Taste and it. Yeah.
Once you've perfected the dish and you want to experiment and try to making your own garam masala at home, go nuts, you know?
Right.
But
yeah, yeah. just, you want to be that pro, you go for
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not, I'm not saying it's not doable, and I'm not no. saying, but it's yeah. like, if I, just being like, this book is for somebody, like, it's not for, like, it can be for somebody who knows how to cook and loves it, or it can be for somebody who doesn't know how to cook, because it's very right. simple ingredients.
Definitely.
And very, yeah. I mean, it's ingredients that you can just find at your local grocery store. It is not, yeah. you don't have to go to like 10 different stores looking for these ingredients. Right. It's very simple and just makes it also something that is very much approachable.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah. And that's the main thing that's the reason why I bought the stuff that I bought. Basically, the only things that are in Western terms, like, exotic, would be your Mita, your Burberry, mm-hmm. and then the teff, which you can use like a whole wheat, but it's got to be dark. Got to be dark yes. whole wheat, you know. But and then like chickpea flour, living on the West Coast, I'll admit we're a little spoiled. I'm
yes,
fairly
we
used
are.
To chickpea. Yeah, yeah. Chickpea flour, like, yeah, we got that around sometimes. So it's like, there's only that. And then the kibbeh, I would say the kibbeh, the Burberry, and the Mita are the. Mm-hmm. The extent of the, yeah, you're probably not going to find this at a Safeway, Fred Meyer, Walmart, yes, unless you're in, like you were saying, like Dallas, where there's a large community, you know, that kind of thing. But the internet is our friends, everybody. Like,
it really is.
It is.
And I mean, you know what, though? Yeah. Even if, depending on where you live, you probably should check out like any African markets or international, yeah, markets, and they usually tend to have them. You can also check and see if there's any, like, just Google Ethiopian restaurants, and mm-hmm, most of the Ethiopian restaurants do have markets inside of them, because, oh, yeah, they know these are ingredients that are hard to capture. And then worst case, literally all these dishes that you're mentioning are on Amazon. So right, just right, like, that's kind of like the easiest thing, because I had a friend who was actually, like, she lives in California, but she was in Joshua Tree and didn't want to, mm-hmm, drive back and forth and stuff. And she called me and goes, I bought everything off Amazon and it's easier. And I'm like, whatever works for you. Like, it's right, not like, yeah, she couldn't just drive to the store and get it. She had that opportunity, but it was just easier just to kind of click away and get everything delivered. And yeah, so,
yeah,
all of these ingredients are easily accessible.
Definitely. And especially the foods that you've got in here, the dishes and everything else. The main thing that I kept thinking was, yeah, this is comfort. Like, this is, mm-hmm, comfort food. This is, yes, you know, you're not trying to be, you know, too showy, but at the same time, it's got those, like, fast and true, very good, like, yes, if you have jalapenos and then you've got anything with a lime, it's probably going to be good. But like the stuffed jalapenos recipe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stealing that. I don't know how many times, and this is like for people kind of like my mom. My mom's afraid of spice because, mm-hmm, like I said, I'm the spice head. I like everything hot, ghost pepper, whatever. But yes, for somebody like my mom, she likes stuffed jalapenos where you do like sausage and cheese and like jalapeno poppers, right? So, mm-hmm, your bar food.
Because it dims it down a little bit, you, right, know, with all the other flavors. Right.
And it tries to make it easier for, yeah, they're pansies. But anyway, the main thing is that the stuffed, yeah, jalapenos that you've got in here, it, yeah, onion, tomato, you've got that stuffed, and it's a lighter version. I think every time somebody tries to dim down jalapenos in any way, they do it, like you said, they're like, I have to override this with fat instead, mm-hmm, of acidity. And I think yours adds the acidity and the balance that it needs to actually highlight the jalapeno and dim it down spice level wise.
Exactly. And then not necessarily, yeah, like stuffing it with like cheese and whatever, right, to a point where, I mean, that's the thing. It's like jalapeno poppers. What are you really tasting? Are you tasting the fried dough outside of it or the cheese or what part does the jalapeno, right, actually shine?
Yeah. Versus, yeah, yeah, that, I taste, you know, the nuance of the panko. Yes. Yes. It's in Kyoto, Japan is where this panko came from. Yeah. I highly doubt it. It is the cream cheese. And then, yes, like there's that little light note of jalapeno at the end and that's it. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, oh man. But that, and it's like you mentioned, in terms of other ingredients, pretty much everything is what we already have. Onions,
yes,
carrot, chicken, beef, everything. And I definitely want to try the beef tartare. I know you got to get fresh beef. You can't.
Yes.
Don't be going to some grocery store. Like, you know, go there and be like,
well, you depends on your grocery thing? Store.
Right.
Like,
depends on, yeah. Yeah. It's
don't
be a good
get
one.
The ones that are like prepackaged, right?
Right.
And
right.
I know some people who are like, oh man, I have to like, you know, actually dice this up and what, like, and then they were like, can I just do ground beef? Absolutely not. You're about, yeah, to eat this, well, raw. You want good quality meat, right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can go to the grocery store and talk to the butcher over the counter and say, hey, I need the least, you know, fat, clean meat that you can get me. And like, they, you know, or personally, my go-to is usually like going to actual like butcher shops, which, right, you know, there's, I know there's not as many as they used to be, but, yeah, and you go and tell them like, hey, because you don't even have to try to explain that you're trying to make Ethiopian food. Just say, hey, I'm making beef tartare. And they'll,
right,
get you the bright, clean, best meat, because at the end of the day, not kind of not saying anything bad about the packaged stuff, but you don't know when it was packaged or how long. Maybe it was frozen, then defrosted. You just don't know.
Yeah.
So that's why it's safer to cook with it. But if I'm eating something raw, I want to make sure it is one of the top best qualities possible.
Definitely. It's like you were saying, the aging. It's very hard to see how much aging has actually happened on a lot of the package stuff. And the way I try to explain it to, you know, like my wife, we've watched cooking shows and she'll be like, beef tartare, like that just never has been a thing that I've like seen on a menu or done. And I'm like, because you got to do it fresh. It's not easy. Yes. Like, it's not super easy to get. I'm like, the best equation I can put to that is sushi. Honestly,
you wouldn't eat frozen,
right? Exactly. Yeah, you don't go to the frozen aisle and you're like, oh yeah, frozen salmon sushi night.
Exactly. Like, that's the best way to look at it. It's like 100% this is the right way to look at it.
Definitely.
So that would be for people like you who is like adventurous and whatever. So like, I usually don't recommend those because you would like, because a lot of people, even the thought of like anything raw, they're like, what do you mean? And so it kind of scares them off. So that's something that you would like build.
Exactly. Like, try all the other recipes, the wats, the fitit, the, you know, injera, do all of that and then realize like, okay, all right, Lula knows what she's talking about.
Let me build on it.
I'm going with this one. And that's, that's what you've got to do. And it's one of those things where I think the main thing that I really got out of this after I got to the very end, especially, and you start going over some of the other breads and everything, how communal it is something that, like, I think as Americans, that is the one thing that it's like, you better appreciate it for that. Because there aren't too many other foods that do that incredibly well. And all I can think is Ethiopian right now. Talking community, communal, family, and then also serving each other.
Yes.
Top dog. Because like I tried to think even like European-wise, people talk about serving meals or dishes in a family style and everything is still separated. You're sitting at this table. Everybody's passing the bowls around. But with the injera and the wats and the different, you know, it's like basically you have all your dishes right there on the injera. Then you have your injera on the side to scoop it with.
Yep.
And yeah, it's like. That,
and you eat together. Do you like, because you know, when you say you shared a meal with somebody, no, you did not sit at a table with separate plates and stuff. You literally ate off the same big plate. And then you definitely like shared this form of like love and community and like, and that's basically the culture. The culture, everything that you, whether it be our Ethiopian coffee ceremony or the meals and everything, is always about community and just sharing things together. And so I love that. I love, and then of course, the fact that we eat with our hands, it's like the most beautiful thing.
It is.
And less dishes, by the way.
Right, exactly. And for those who have not tried eating with your hands, which I'll admit, in my life, I think I've done it 3 times, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a typical white guy. I am so sorry, Lulu. But yeah, I just, you know, it's like one of those things, like I've done it like 3 times, and it's one of those things, like I don't know how to describe it other than it brings you to this point of like, the way that I explain it, and people think that I'm being dramatic when I say this, but all the time when I was growing up, and you probably have heard this as well, where people try to say, oh, well, you know, yeah, sure, you drive a car, but it's an automatic. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't really know how to drive a car until you drive stick, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you got to drive manual, like that kind of thing. To me, it's the same thing with food. It's like, you can eat with your fork, you can eat with all these utensils, you know, definitely chopsticks. That was a learning curve, which many people have definitely taken up. Like, that's not a huge deal now, at least on the West Coast. I grew up in Missouri. Chopsticks were a big deal in Missouri. You had to convince some folks. But eating with your hands, that should not take any convincing. And on top of that, it's like I said, it's like driving a manual. It's like driving a stick. You feel mm-hmm. more in tune with the food. You can feel somewhat of the
connected.
Texture.
Right. You just, you feel more yeah. connected. There's nothing in between. And so, like, I'm not going to lie, like, because a lot of times people are like, what do you mean eat with your hands? And I'm like, don't you eat chicken wings with your hands? Don't right. you eat pizza with your hands? It's like, yeah. it's not this big thing, but it's like, there's a lot of cultures that eat with their hands. It's like, you know, yeah. You know, whether it be like African, different African countries, or Moroccan food is usually you eat with your hands. You know, it's just, it's a lot of cultures always believe in eating with your hands because it builds this connection between the food and you, and there's nothing in between.
Right.
And I just kind of feel like yeah. it tastes better too. I don't know why, but it's maybe definitely. It's mental. But
right. And that's the thing, is if you get a little bit of sauce or, like, you know, some leftover injera on your fingertips, who cares if it goes into the next one? And then it blends, and then you're getting different flavors of different tastes. It's like, yeah, it's like I said, you are one with it. It's mm-hmm. like I said, especially with the injera being, you know, it's not as thick as a pancake, but it is definitely not as thin as a crepe. And so you're basically using that to then gather up everything. And mm-hmm. like I said, you feel the texture of it, the heat, the warmth of it. If there's any spices, you can see it as it's inside the little pocket you've made for yourself. And then, yeah, you just put it in your mouth and it's like, oh my gosh, like, I'm more one with this. And then if you're in this, you know, a communal environment where you've got family mm-hmm. around or friends and you're eating that way, yeah, it's just like this visceral, great thing that is happening. And I can only imagine in Ethiopia, eating Ethiopian food with your family, especially growing up.
Yeah.
I would not doubt those are your greatest memories. Probably.
Of course, 100%. Yeah. And I mean, you know, and that's, like I said, even after we moved to the States, the fact that my family just kept up with that culture and that, you know, that way of being that way. You know, of course, we had our, you know, normal Western nights where we did have spaghetti and stuff like that, and that's fine. Yeah. But I think, you know, for when we ate Ethiopian food together, it was just always nicer and it felt better. And, you know, even here, like, you know, pre-COVID, my friends and I, you know, my Ethiopian friends would be like, let's go out to an Ethiopian restaurant, and we are eating together and talking, and we're sharing off this one big plate, and it always just tasted better or felt better right. afterwards than, you know, having an individual plate, you right. know.
Exactly. Well, and it's one of those things where especially when everything is on the injera, it's one of those things where you're getting some of the smells and some of the, like, actual, I don't want to say texture, but, like, you can tell how much, you know, fat, salt, seasonings, herbs, what have you, are in.
Mm-hmm. Some everything of those, just kind of soaks wasps. Right in.
Right. It soaks right in. And so instead of having, like, your separate plates, or if you're like, I'm at a picnic table somewhere and each one of us has a cardboard or styrofoam box and we yeah. all ordered separate things, there's this, like, awkward thing of where you'll look at a friend's, like, meal that they got, or a family member's, and you're looking at it, and then they have to, like, oblige in a way and be like, mm-hmm. do you want to taste some of this? And you're like, well, if you want to spare, and if it's like, and let's be honest, chicken tenders, right? They're mm-hmm. individual pieces. So you're yep. kind of like, well, I only have 3 tenders, bud. Like, I don't know what else can't I share can it. Do here. Exactly. Right. Like, I can tear a little piece off. Like, I don't know. But with the injera and everything on top of it, it's like, yeah, just get this little corner. Like, just yeah. grab it. You know?
Feel free. And that's yeah. the thing. It's like, you know, when you're, it's like, it's almost freeing, where you can have multiple dishes and different things on there, the different what's on there, and everyone can have, like, oh, let me have some of the meat. Okay, let me have some of the vegetables now. And then it's just like, you know, it's essentially family style, but actually family style on one plate.
Yeah. And so, and see, that brings me to, like, here were some of the questions that popped up in my mind. Okay.
Sure.
So, number one, and this is what I try to think of, like, I would say your stereotypical United States of America type of party, right? Where it's either Super Bowl, 4th of July, what have you. Have you had like an Ethiopian Super Bowl or Ethiopian 4th of July where you've got your injera, you have all your wats, you have your side dishes, you've got the desserts going, you've got everything. And you're like, this is the perfect blend out of any holiday or like, well, a lot of people would consider a Super Bowl the holiday. I'm not even a huge football fan, but I like the food of Super
Bowl. Just for the commercials, right? And the food.
Yeah, exactly. Just the commercials and food. I'll watch the Puppy Bowl a little bit. Like, you know, I'll get that in there. But that's the thing is like, I'm at least there for the food. Like I'm at least like, yeah, I'm like, course. I'm like, yeah, buffalo wings, nachos. Some people, if they go all out, I think that they do the large pretzels, right? The large fluffy pretzels. But I guess what I was wondering is like, have you had your traditional Ethiopian things and you were like, yeah, this is like perfect for this westernized thing. Like, why isn't this done more often?
I can tell you that literally every single Thanksgiving at my mother's house, that's basically how it is, where we have all these Ethiopian dishes, and then you also have on the same table the turkey and the stuffing and whatever, and that's every year. There's the American stuff and the Ethiopian stuff, and people, like, you will see people making, because, you know, when we're having those big parties and it's a buffet, you know, then you're having the individual plates, right? So people take the injera, they'll take some of the whats, and then you'll see people putting, like, a side of the turkey and the mashed potato on top of the injera and stuff, and it's just like it happens all the time because it's all in what your preferences and what makes you happy, right?
Right.
And so I've been to Super Bowl parties where people are like, and I'm just like, oh, it's a potluck, what should I bring? And they're like, bring something different, like bring something Ethiopian. And I'm like, okay. Like,
yeah.
And we'll see, so if it fits. Here yeah. And then, and it usually does, because they're like, what is this? And why do I love it so much? And so, and that's the thing. It's as long as the people, like as long as the person or the event that you're hosting and the people you're having with you are open to new experiences and new cuisines, and that's what makes it so easy to blend in. But like for us, you know, we are American, but we're also Ethiopian first. So every single event, like, you know, like I said, Thanksgiving, yes, Thanksgiving has to have a turkey, has to have the stuffing and the mashed potatoes and everything else. Yeah. But we can't have a buffet of food without Ethiopian food. So that when like we don't even eat at the table, because the whole table is just food. So you just make a plate and you go sit on the couch. Right.
Yeah. That is what I was looking for. It's because like you were saying, basically, I think one of the things that people don't talk about enough are basically the leftovers after Thanksgiving.
Isn't that the best part?
Yeah. It creates like six other meals afterwards. And so including that with anything Ethiopian, I can only imagine, like you were saying, it's like, oh, Thanksgiving, this is so great, and look, we got the turkey, we got, and then the next day you're like, here we go. let's blend this up.
How do we do? I mean, honestly, for me, I love leftovers. I love recreating leftovers, even like during the week. Like, let's say I'm cooking something different every night or every other night. Sunday is my leftover day, where I just kind of look at all the food that's left, and you just take it out, and you're like, okay, what dish can I recreate? You know, one of the favorite and easiest being fried rice, right? So, I just made a pot roast, and there's pot roast left over, but there was also chicken left over. You know what? We're just going to chop everything up. We're going to throw in some rice, some eggs. We're having fried rice for dinner on Sunday, you know? And it's just such, it just makes it like leftovers are the best. And like you said, with Ethiopian food, if you have some wet left and you have some injera and you're like, kind of done this, to, you know, I'm like, I don't want to eat this like this anymore. Let me turn it into fit and have it on the side of the jalapeno while I'm at it.
Yeah, see? Oh, man. I tell you. And see, that's the thing is like, I feel like, with quite a few people, they're just not getting creative enough. You know what I mean? They need to imagine a little more of like, hey, how many times have you, you know, gone to a restaurant of some kind that you're like, I've never had X, Y, or Z before, right?
Yeah.
Could be Japanese food for the first time. Could be, you know, where I'm out here in Oregon, we have a big Russian population. It's kind of like, what? How did that happen? And so, there, you know, could be Russian food, could be a lot of different things. And you've got that left over and you're like, I don't know, maybe you're like Mr. Dallas Texan, right? And you're like, I like steak and eggs, right? It's like, yeah. Well, hey, that leftover, you know, wat that you've got, especially if it's got lentils or chickpeas or any, you know, anything like that, especially if it's a beef one, especially spicy beef.
Yes.
Pour that over the top of your steak and eggs, or just put it on the eggs, make an omelet. Like, just simple. Get creative with it. Yeah,
exactly. I think like everyone just feels like there's only one way to making things. You know, there's no wrong way. It's food, right? It just, just get creative, you know, and find, I mean, I will like make some things together and be like, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but it sounds good. Like, it sounds like a great idea. Definitely. And if you fail, just add more peppers to it and it'll be fine.
Make it spicy. Make it to where others, they got to be careful. You know, you're like, Yeah, don't want to bite into that too hard. Believe me.
More I know, but I think as long as more people are like adventurous, and like I said, I think that's why I'm like, you know, very happy to just be able to communicate and share, you know, not only my love for the, you know, the culture and the food, but also to make it so that it's not, you know, essentially scaring people off, like the thought of like, oh, Ethiopian food, I don't even know what that is. I don't even know how to make it. Oh, that just, it sounds like it's too hard or it's too out, you know, it's just not something that's in the norm. And so when you look at it and you're like, oh, that's it? Well, that's easy enough. Maybe I should try it. And so if I can get like people just to open up their minds, to be open to different cultures and foods, then I'm happy, you know.
Definitely.
And that's kind of like, that's where I usually go with it, because for me, I'm like you, I'm the adventurous type. You tell me there's a new cuisine or new dish, I'm like, let me try it. You know, I don't care what it is. I'm like, you know, what's the worst that ever happened? I don't like it, but you know what could happen? I could find my new favorite dish.
And just for those folks out there that are like, I'm gonna stick to my, you know, American whatever diet, right? Which it incorporates quite a few different things, you know, mainly Italian, a lot, some German, right? There's a, you know, you got your traditional things that come up and it's like, okay, fine.
Like, there's the like thing, collards in there, collards by itself, collard meat,
which,
there's cabbage stew. Like, there's just so many things that are not like, it's not this like very weird dish that you're like, I can't even imagine making this type of thing. It's like, no, you make it all the time. It's just cooked differently with a different spice now.
Definitely. And the way that I try to look at it is in terms of, especially like me growing up, I grew up in Southwest Missouri. And so it's, there's a blend of folks that they think that they're Midwestern. So you're like Minnesota, right? Minnesota, Wisconsin, that kind of thing, you know? But then there's a large swath of folks, especially in Southern Missouri, that are like, no, man, we're Southern. And you're like, I don't know. Like, so you've got that like kind of a weird mix in there. And the way that I always look at it is Southern food, a lot of the Southern staples of Southern food, it is African food. Like almost
all roots or something. Oh yeah, totally. Like that,
yeah, there's something connected to it. Like definitely. And so, you know, a lot of these wats, I can only imagine incorporating some of them into a gumbo or a jumbo.
Oh my God. Maybe that's going to be my next book. It's going to be like me trying to incorporate these into like the staple dishes, right?
Definitely. Because
I can, could you imagine making one of these wats inside of the gumbo? Like that would be delicious.
And the collards, like, you know how many people that is their like dish, that is their thing, is like, I am the best at making collards. The pot liquor is amazing. You're not going to, you know, best my grandmother's recipe. And it's kind of like, bet you ain't had it like this before. Like, you get to spread that and it's great. And that's, like you mentioned, that's what I really loved about this book. That's why I went and bought those seasonings and
thank
the teff
you. Thank
and
you.
Everything else is because, like you said, to me, this is very, very approachable. And I know I'm the cook, right? Of me and my wife. She's the baker. So I try to leave the baking with her.
I know. I'm more of the, like, I dabble a little bit on the baking, but cooking is my thing.
Because,
you know, baking is always like, you have to follow the recipe and you have to, like, measure. And it doesn't, because if you don't, if it says 1 teaspoon and you put 2, it's over.
I'll let you steal this phrase. Cooking is like conducting a symphony, and baking is like building a birdhouse.
Yep, sounds about right.
Yeah, exactly. I will conduct the symphony and let all of the notes go over. I'll let them fade and let them, you know, build. I'll do all these things. And baking is like, I am going to make the perfect symmetrical birdhouse that will hold exactly 20 pounds of snow on top of its roof. And you're like, what? Like, how is that fun for you? And they're like, oh, this is amazing. You're like, oh, come on.
I want the ability to be free. Like I said, you've seen in the recipes where it's like, base it on your spice level. You know, you like spicy. Instead of jalapenos, use serranos. You're kind of too scared to do it. And it says, you know, you have to use 4 tablespoons of berbere. Only use 2. Like, it's fine. Yeah. And you taste it and then you build on it. It's very free for all. Right. Now you look at my tiramisu recipe. Follow that to the T. Trust me. Don't try to go crazy. Just follow those. Anything that's like dessert, just follow that to the T, because if it, you know, it's like if it says to put 1 egg and you decide to put 4, then you're going to have like an omelet, not necessarily baking anymore.
Yeah. And that's the, what is it? Make it like 5 times by the recipe. And then the 6th time, let's see if you can get creative, right? Like, let's see if you can add some things, right?
Yeah. And then just kind of be like, just build on it. I mean, cooking is supposed to be fun, or at least that's for me, right? It's something that is just like, you know, you cook with love and you're putting this love into something that you're going to share it with your loved ones and friends and everything. And so it doesn't need to be the stressful, hard thing. And also, you know, give nutrition. You need that.
Yeah, yeah. You need sustenance, right?
Yeah.
But no, all I got to say is it shines through in this cookbook, Enebla, by Lula here. Like I said,
go out.
Get this book, everybody. It is approachable. It is... Like I said, it's a good read on its own, just reading the stories that you have in here. Definitely the Ethiopia facts that you have in your introduction. I'm not going to lie. I read the first like 3 to 4 paragraphs. I told my wife, I told my good buddy, I told all of them. I said, man, this is going to be like an unapologetic Ethiopian book. Like, this is not trying to be... Let you know this thing.
Like, I am like, Ethiopian, hear me roar type of book.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is like, that's what makes it so great. And honestly, you almost have to have that to make it approachable, I think. Because it's like, you know, we take pride in these things. These are the things that we do when we're cooking, when we're trying to get those flavors to shine. And like I said, it comes out in the book. It's absolutely amazing. And I read this book in a matter of a little over 2 days of just reading through it. And it was, like I said, it was great. I had to get definitely all the ingredients. Like I said, I may have to, you know, email you or what have you about my injera if something goes awry.
If my fermenting
process is not perfect. I'll have to figure it out. But I know that I am going to figure it out, because I got to try all these. I have to. Definitely. And like I said, October 4th, everybody, it is on pre-sale now on Amazon. And it's out there. And definitely got to mention definitely the publisher. That would be Touchwood here. Yeah, Touchwood Publishers. Definitely. Recipes from an Ethiopian Kitchen, Enebla. Lula, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And everybody, go out there, get the book, eat more Ethiopian food, make it part of your weekly, your monthly, your Thanksgiving traditions. Let's get this going. Let's get it. And we will see everybody next time on Cookbook Corner.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.